The following program was produced by a community producer.
Oh, are we on? Good morning, Malden. Welcome to 02148. My name is Mike Sharon. I am your host for the day. We usually tape at night, and don't be fooled by our wonderful background. We're actually taping on Saturday morning, April 20th, 2024. That's right, 420. Do that what you will. I'm not here to judge. Welcome. It's great to have you all joining us today. I have a great guest. And we have a great show. His name is Dave Russo. You know him, especially in Malden, but nationally renowned here in this country. And he's played all over the country. And not just a comedian, he's an actor. He's an entertainer. He's an MC. He even break dances. But more than anything, he's an entertainer. But don't take my word for it. Why don't we take a look at some of Dave's work and come back and chat with him.
Hey, guys. Dave Russo here. For Dirty Water TV. Here with Ray Bourque, living legend, Mr. Bobby Orr. Here with Mickey Ward.
Anyways, I mentioned before that we like to break new guys. This is another new guy tonight here. It's his first time doing Comics Come Home.
Dave Russo, I tell you what, this kid is such a great kid and a good friend of mine. He's one of the top comedians working the country today.
Lenny was doing a show for the troops with him. He said, Dennis, you got to put him on. We're going to break him tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Dave Russo.
I am back at Lasher Park in Lowell, Massachusetts for the fourth annual Milan Lucic Celebrity Softball Game. Guys, here with Theo Epstein, back from Chi-Town. Dave Russo here at the Boston Bruins alumni versus the Boston Comedy All-Stars. Right now it's quote-unquote halftime in this two-period event. We are getting crushed.
Here with number 63, Brad Marchand.
Here with Bill from Buffalo Tom. Here with my idol, Mr. Terry O'Reilly, formerly of the Boston Bruins coach, captain. So there you have it, guys. Thank you for listening to me, Dave Russo, right here on Dirty Water TV.
Here, Dave, that was some of your work behind the scenes. As
the
well as
the scenes.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
I look taller on cable than some of those pictures.
This is the first time we're doing a Saturday morning, so it's all new to us here.
We're on a different, we're on a different set.
Yeah.
And so I would have wore pants. Your old set, you didn't really require to wear pants.
Yeah.
I just got back from Florida.
Thank you. You flew in last night.
Yeah, came in last night. Doing an event, for the troops in the USO.
Yes.
And,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in. I mean, I know you flew in late last night and got a lot going on.
I love the 02148.
I know you do.
And as a matter of fact, you had called me up before and said, hey, you want to do 420? And I was like, as a matter of fact, I'm doing 420 right now. No, 420. Whose birthday is on 420? Let's say Hitler's birthday, I think, is April 20th.
Yes.
My God. You can't smoke to that. Jeez. Yeah, my best buddy in the world, Joe Arsenault's birthday is today. I want to wish him a happy Malden guy. Malden through and through. I call him Joey Stats. He'll be able to tell you in 1986 who was the pitcher on a Tuesday for Malden, who they played. That's Joey Stats. Happy birthday, Joe Arsenault.
Happy birthday.
It. He's a Maldonian through and through. His family came through, so he's a...
That's right. Well, it's been, you know, you've been on a few times. It's been a while, maybe almost a year.
And, hasn't been that long?
I think you were on last May, so we're getting close to a year. But as you said, how do you like our new digs, by the way?
I got to tell you, much more than I expected. Like I said, I wish I put bands on.
I was thinking blue.
I was thinking blue. I'm like, what will punch good? I got a little bit of color. You know, what will punch out? Yeah. Scally cap.
Well, how you been? Busy as usual.
Yeah. You know, the entertainment industry with the social media and everything it's nonstop nowadays. So, you know, I've been involved in the entertainment world, since July 5th, 1984.
Well, can I interrupt you there? I meant to ask you that. I mean, there's a lot of folks who know you and of course, know your beginnings and everything, but there's some that don't. And for those that do, it's nice to recap maybe a summary of how you got into the business.
Well, in the eighth grade at Chevre School, where I do my podcast live from the convent.
Yes.
At Chevre School in the eighth grade, I was a break dancer, and I was a phenom break dancer back in 1984.
It was kind of the trend then, no?
It was a big trend, and the thing was, I was 14, 15 years old, but I probably looked maybe 10 or 9, so I'm doing these windmills and the spins and head spins, and so I got recognized by a gentleman by the name of Wyatt Jackson from Roxbury, Massachusetts. He is a gentleman that's been in charge of the arts. He's a professional tap dancer, world-renowned tap dancer. So he was producing commercials. He saw me dance, and Sugar Babies had a commercial for Nabisco. And back then, you want to talk about progressive, they picked an African-American boy, an African-American girl, a Caucasian girl, Caucasian guy, Latino, the whole thing. We did the whole Sugar Baby, Sugar Candy, so much fun to have around, Nabisco, bing. And so I was the one that was nationally picked I was the Caucasian guy.
10 years old?
I was 14.
It was
eighth grade.
Oh, you looked like you were 10.
Yeah, I probably looked like I was 10 years old. And so in the eighth grade at that time, I did a national commercial for Nabisco, Sugar Baby's Candies. I did a Dunkin' Donuts commercial with the guy who used to dress up. He was the donut maker. Time to make the donuts. We were doing this stuff. He was dressed up like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And also in the same year, I mean, people, how I get into this? I did a full page spread in Filene's, the Sunday Globe. And you ready for this? I was sporting a Nike gear. I was one of the first ones back in 1984 to promote Nike sports gear.
Wow.
And I have the photos into the Globe and stuff like that. I'm wearing a Scally cap in one of the photos back in 1984.
That was before Jordan, even.
Yeah, well, Jordan, in 1984 is when Jordan won.
But no one knew Nike.
No one knew Nike. That's when it came around because he won the Olympic gold in 88. Okay, but I think in 84 is when he signed with Nike. I think he was relatively new. I'd have to go back. But
yeah.
I have the full page of the Nike, so I was in a Sugar Babies commercial, a Dunkin' Donuts commercial, full page spread, modeling for Esprit. I was, all I did was walk down the hall because I was this tall and the models were really, really tall, so I just held their hands. Yeah.
Yeah, so at this age, though, did you envision yourself in entertainment? It was just something, did you have the bug, as they say?
I'm going to tell you what happened. So I went to Pope John. Eighth grade, Chevre School's great. Breakdance commercial's doing great. Now it's really big. Now I'm in the ninth grade, I'm at Pope John. And back then in 1985, you got bullied if you were different.
Yeah.
So I got a little bullied, a little different. Long story short, I left Pope John, went to Malden High School.
Gotcha.
Okay. And from there, I hooked up with, Chris Rogers, Peter Eileen, rest his soul, Chris Ivory, Gray from Gray's Anatomy. Yeah. So we were all breakdancing, and we ended up doing... the Malden High School was the Junior Varieties.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So my freshman year, I did Junior Varieties, and we won Stars of the Show.
Wow.
And 85.
Okay.
So the reason how I get it, so the breakdance is good. I'm doing these commercials. And then all of a sudden, breakdancing kind of the fad went out.
Yeah.
The fad went out. And Mr. Zimmerman says to me, what are you going to do now to be popular? What are you going to do now? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't understand. He knew the trend was over, kid.
Right.
Now rock and roll's
find
in.
Something else.
Rock and roll's in right now, right? Yeah. Rock is good. Rock is great. Disco sucks. I just went away. That's what he was telling me. And so I ended up somehow, by the grace of God, and John Lopresti, and definitely higher power, I was playing football, the freshman-sophomore team. And they put me in for one play, and I got an interception. Somehow, I caught the ball one hand.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I was coming in, going this way, it threw it that way. Somehow it hits me. But the funny part of the story, I think, is that I was so small, they didn't have a girdle or pants to fit me, so I was wearing these extra small pants. So when I caught the ball, when I went up to go front, yeah. I was like waddling. I couldn't move. So the guy knocked me on my butt, but I didn't fumble. And John Lopresti came up, you can't be blah, blah. So I made a deal with him. If I was allowed to do the kickoff returns,
yeah,
I would go on the wrestling team. So I gave up entertainment, stopped playing ice hockey, went out for the wrestling team, went 12-3 my first year, didn't lose my first match when I first wrestled until the finals of the Belmont tournament. Like, I was in the finals of a tournament. I've never lost. And the kid pinned me.
Wow.
I lost. It wasn't fun. But, yeah.
But you were a real athlete. I mean, you were playing ice hockey. You were playing football. You're an athlete.
You know,
wrestling.
I got to tell you, I don't know what camera I'm looking at. I was talking about your mom earlier.
Yes.
When I was a freshman in high school,
yep.
When I transferred in, your mom took a liking to me. And I know she thought I was something special because she saw me dancing, and she took a liking to me. But she was a gym teacher, so she yep. had me doing – she's the one that taught me. And I remember this going, because I was short, I don't know if she knew something, but she said, don't do heavy legs
because
you'll get too big.
Yeah.
Do, like, higher reps and good technique. And I always remember that.
Oh, some, yeah.
And I've done that my whole life. You know, I just turned 54 years old. Thank you. April 11th. Thank
Looking
you.
Looking good.
Someone owes me a spanking. All right. You Google that. It's all good. But, yes.
Well, she was a physical therapist in the Army, and she, you know. She
your was mom was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
I knew she knew something because, like I said to you, what she told me, and I was doing the weight on lifting legs.
Yes.
I never did squats. I always did what your mom told me, the Nautilus machine to push up. Like, get up here and push up. And somehow, I've been telling people that my entire life. I say, listen, yeah. squats are bad for you. And it's probably because your mom taught me that. I'm just kind of realizing that right now. But I tell the people all the time, 8 to 10 to 12 reps, good technique, and you don't hurt your body.
Yeah.
And that's what she taught me. She's like, if you're going to start doing this heavy stuff, you're going to be doing this, you're going to shake,
yeah,
you're going to
wow,
hurt your
thank
body.
Thank you for saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, good. I didn't know she was a PT.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
really. Now it makes sense.
Makes sense.
Champions in the 0248. Yeah. Yeah. But she, your mom definitely took a liking to me. So I went to gym class. It was one of the classes I liked. And I ended up on the wrestling team. I did really, really well with I really took a liking to it. Funny story about the wrestling, though, because I was coming from breakdance, and I do want to share this story with you.
Sure.
The first day of practice, because I was a breakdancer and I was cool, I wore wristbands to practice and a headband. And John Lopresti grabbed the headband, wrapped it around my neck, choked me, and goes, yeah, you don't want to wear headbands to wrestle. Yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
Right. So where's the segue to comedy?
All right, so segue to comedy. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so now, some of you may or may not know, I became one of my proudest achievements. I became Mullen High School's first ever state wrestling champion in 1988, February 26, 27, and got voted outstanding wrestler of the state tournament, where all the coaches vote, so I got the MVP. From there, I earned a Division I wrestling scholarship to Wilshire University, where the late, great coach John G. Reese just passed away at 95 years old, the number two winningest Division I wrestling coach in the United States of America.
Wow.
I ended up wrestling for him, okay? So
great mentor.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. So I wrestled for him for 4 years, but when I was in college, I went into creative writing, and Dr. Jane Elms Crahall took a liking to me in my public speaking class, and so I just started writing comedy and just started writing things. I remember writing jokes about... I remember one of the first jokes I ever wrote was about when the kids back in the day would wear they would keep the tag on the hats, and the older people said, that's so stupid,
that's so stupid.
And I would say, it's brilliant. I go, if their team loses, they return the hat, and they get the new one. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Goofy little jokes like that. But she took a liking to it, and...
Did you perform the jokes or just write the
jokes?
You
know what? The one time, it's called an entertainment speech, and we had to write, the first class of public speaking was a 3 to 5 minute speech about yourself. I am from Boston, this is what I do, how did I get here, blah, blah, blah. And the final was a 10-minute, it's called after dinner speech. And I came in second in the class on that one.
Okay.
And it was an after, so it's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
It definitely was funny. Yeah. And it, I really wish I had those cue cards, man, because it was one of the best things I think I ever wrote. You know what I mean? It was, I had some good analogies in there.
Yeah.
But from there, I started writing comedy, but I was in college in Pennsylvania. And so I got a job out of college in education. I was coaching. I was assistant director of admission to private college.
Yeah.
But I was still doing writing.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that Boston was really the hub of comedy.
Yeah.
So I went to an open mic night one night. And every comedian will tell you this. They'll see the open micers, and they'll think that they're real comedians, and we'll go, geez, I'm funnier than this guy.
Yeah.
You don't realize they're all new. They're all open micers. So I went up. I did pretty well.
Yeah.
And then
never had a fear of speaking, which is the number one fear in most people,
you know,
in front of people?
I'll tell you what. I've fallen in and out of public speaking when it comes to, because you get insecure every once in a while.
Yeah.
You really feel, I mean, I remember going through, it's just lack of confidence.
Sure.
But
you picked the toughest profession.
I know. Because sometimes, you know, it's funny. I had to perform, I'm a backtrack. I had to perform, because you have these two Bruins. This is great work by your dad,
right,
by the
that's
way.
That's right, my
Stanley
dad's.
Cup in 2011.
Vancouver.
Yep. And so, where am I ADD in now? I just lost my train of thought.
Public speaking?
No, we're talking about, it'll come
that's
back.
That's okay, it'll come back.
It'll come back.
Bruins threw you out. They're playing tonight.
Well, the Bruins playoffs, right? That's why I was trying to segue into the Bruins, and I forget which way I was going with it. Ah, son of a gun. Oh, about public speaking.
Yes.
About public speaking. Okay, this year at the 100th centennial anniversary for the Bruins, they had all the Bruins get together at the Kowloon. And I had to perform stand-up comedy.
Oh, that was a great event.
The best of the best Bruins in London. We're talking stage left, Bobby Orr.
Oh, yeah.
You got Ray Bourque over here, Bob Sweeney, Rick Middleton, Terry O'Reilly.
Chief, right?
Busick. Don Marquardt, Johnny Busick was there. You had Jerry Cheevers. You had Andy Brickley. I'm trying to visualize all the guys that I was having fun poking fun of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Terry, crowd.
Rick Middleton, Andy Brickley. You had Barry Peterson. The best of the best for the Bruins. Mike Milbury was there. Brad Park was there.
Wow.
And so I'm doing jokes, and I got to keep it clean.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to share the joke what I did for America that I did well for, okay?
Yeah.
So I've interviewed Bobby Orr a couple times. I think you've showed me on the show. And I've been down to his place on Cape Cod. I've done some shows for him. You know, we all know Bobby's the best.
Nicest,
you know,
man,
nice
right?
guy in the world. I get to his place. He wants to give me a tour of his place. I'm telling this in front of all the people from the Bruins. He's like, Dave, come on in. Let me show you some stuff.
Bobby's,
you
know, where? Right?
No, Bobby's stage left.
Okay.
And I'm telling the whole crowd, when I was at his house a while back,
yeah,
that he was so nice. I got to his house. He wanted to give me a tour. Guys, he was like, Dave, come on in. Let me show you some stuff you don't have. Hey, come on in this other room. I'll show you some other stuff you could never afford. Come on in. And he got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
He knew it was clean.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
And it had to be fun. So he gave me a lot of support.
Yeah.
You know, you had the Turk was there. Begins with a D. Number 16.
Sanderson
was there.
Yeah.
So a lot of alpha males in the room. And
The big bad Bruins.
And we covered. And,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where I ADD'd on that one. But that's like a time when you're saying about insecure fear. I had fear.
You had fear.
I had fear
right.
because one opportunity, you're going to be performing in front of these people your whole life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cam was there.
Oh, of course.
The president from Harvard, Don
Sweeney.
Sweeney was there.
Oh, yeah.
And I gave him a shout out. I said, listen, I go, I don't know how, I didn't make many jokes about last year. You know, how the end. I go, listen, regarding decision makers on the 100th centennial, I think you made a great decision having it right here at the Kowloon with Bobby Wong. And they were like, So that's how I had to open up. I had to kiss butt. You had to kiss butt first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have a great relationship with Bruins alum and doing things for years, right?
You know, I kind of been a Bruins fan.
Yeah.
You know, been going since I was 5 years old. My parents been taking us. We've had season tickets for years.
I'm surprised you weren't going tonight.
Oh. Tonight's 8 o'clock game. Well, how do you know I'm not going? Who am I bringing? That's the question. So I've been going to Bruins games. And when I got my big break, in 2004 or 5, when I came back and I pitched to Nesson, to Dirty Water TV.
Oh, yeah.
About doing local, you know, because they weren't really covering comedy nightlife. And they weren't really covering, so I kind of, the Bruins thing kind of slipped in because I was covering nightlife and the comedians, and then I got hit up, two Boston police officers, and I'm visualizing their faces, I don't remember their names. They got shot in the line of duty. And so we produced the Comedy All-Stars first, the Bruins alumni, and all the money went towards the two Boston police officers.
Nice.
And that was with my cousin at Perrazzo Skating Rink in East Boston. Mark Swilciotti set it up. So that's how I ended up getting involved. And then I brought the Dirty Water TV crew there. And next thing you know, I'm interviewing Ray Bourque's telling me, hey, man, you're pretty good skater. You know, I'm interviewing then Sweeney and Terry O'Reilly. And then we just became friends because, number one, if you know anything about hockey players are the best. They're super down to earth, super cool, because they take punches to the face and smile. You know what I mean? It's, you know, when the game's over, they don't know. It's so strange how hockey
really
players
true.
Can shake your hand after they just, you just pummel each other. It's a great little man-to-man thing. But I just, you know what? It just, we kind of hit. Terry O'Reilly I met in the year 2000. I was doing a show in the Seabrook area. Salisbury Beach. He and his wife Judy were there. There was only 20 people in the audience. We became friends. 3 years later, I see them. Now we're friends. Now they're inviting me to their house on the 4th of July. And then Rick Middleton, you know. All these guys were my idols growing up. Ricky Middleton, Terry O'Reilly, Bob Sweeney, Ray Bourque, all these guys. Bobby, I didn't really get to watch.
Yeah.
And now these guys are my friends. I
can
call them up and go, hey.
That's
but
so cool.
With that being said, these guys, they're givers. It's like they're on the planet to serve. Because you got Bob Sweeney, the president of Boston Bruins alumni, who went to high school in Massachusetts, went to college
BC,
in BC,
right?
And played for the Bruins, and I was the Boston Bruins Foundation. So that legacy in itself is unbelievable.
Yeah,
right?
He's done a wonderful
job. But when I talk about service, he gives back to the community.
Yeah.
You know, you got Frank Simonetti, from Stoneham. He's the president of the Boston Bruins alumni, and Kenny Hodge Jr., now the vice president. These guys don't have to do this. Kenny Hodge Jr., you know, his dad's a legend. His dad was there as well, by the way. And so these guys, what I'm taking from them is that they had this gift, and now they give it back. These guys are still skating 50, 60 years old.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And the people love it. The fans come
out
for
that,
right?
Simonetti and Kenny, these guys this year, Mark Wallen with the PR, I want to say they have 28 to 30. Rick Minow was telling me they have like 10 more games this year than they had last year.
Okay.
And they're all bitten. So, yeah, and they're raising tons of money for the Boston Bruins Fund, NHL alumni, Pan Mass Challenge, Dana-Farber, all the good ones, Head Trauma Awareness, the Bruins alumni and the foundation, they have been on. Man, Massachusetts, we got the best schools. They've been on the cutting edge. We were doing Head Trauma Awareness over a decade ago.
Yeah.
With helmets and stuff
like
that. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So
good
that's
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about giving back with all the, and of course they do, but you do too. I mean, a lot of charity events, a lot of charity softball type things and bowling and all that kind of stuff. And
kind of fell into that.
Yeah.
Kind of fell into that with Mike Clark at Giggles Comedy Club. See, for 20 years, we were doing what's called All Pro Productions, and we were doing comedy fundraisers. That's how we were kind of earning our living. We would do fundraisers for local police and fire all around the state and actually New England. We would go up to Maine. We'd go up to New Hampshire. We'd go down to Rhode Island. It was called All Pro Productions. And that for about two decades, we did that. And so we kind of learned as comedians, you know, low overhead, people want to laugh, and people need to raise money. I mean, I've raised money. I don't want to kind of seem like, because I've been involved.
Sure.
How about this? I've been involved. If I were to think about it right now, I've been involved because I have a bottle of wine at my house with all the bands that I've done shows for.
Oh,
rubber
nice.
Bands. So,
good.
You know, Kevin Knox, Melanoma was probably one of the first ones.
Right.
All Pro Product with the police and the fire. I have a lot of respect for the firemen. My grandfather was an arsonist. There's a joke for you. All right. Let's see. And then but since then, with these fundraisers, my goodness, man, Dana-Farber, breast cancer awareness, Alzheimer's, diseases you couldn't pronounce if the word was right in front of you. I remember a family. And Mike Clark, I got to give Mike Clark a lot of credit. He said to me early on, he goes, listen, don't get too involved with the charity. Like, don't know too personal. Don't get too personal.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make you sad.
Yeah.
You raise the money. And I didn't understand that until I got, man, I got a letter in the mail with a young girl's picture. And the woman thanked me so much for donating my time and all this stuff. And the girl did pass away. And I think about that every day because this woman, obviously us comedians touched this woman. Because she mailed me a picture of the dog. Hey, you know, thank you. I mean, so there is a reward to this, to giving back. Like, I kind of fell into it. I don't want to say, like, I sought it out. But once I realized that it is a purpose for it, I do it now,
You can make a difference. Of course, yeah. A lot of local stuff,
help.
Too.
You know what? People need money. I just did a fundraiser. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, sure.
For a woman who's running down in, she's running for red, white, and blue veterans out in her area. And she has no money. Nobody has money, but yeah, she raised money,
yeah.
And she's doing it. So I think that's kind of, when I see people that don't have it, that do it.
Yeah, you try to get them.
I'm just as impressed. Yeah, I'm just as impressed with people that have it, that help. Do you know what I mean? It's like you always see the people, they have nothing, and yeah. They're giving their everything. These people have everything, and they're giving something. So where are we in the middle? That's where we are.
That's good stuff.
That's where me and you have to come in. And you out there that are watching, you really do. Like when people say, hey, you know, $5, $10, it's so easy nowadays. Just go online, boom, 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 and you don't even see it. And it's $10. And that $10 will make a difference. It'll definitely make a difference.
Yeah, and you're definitely making a difference. And a lot of charity events, a lot of softball things. We actually, I think, are we good to go with our second roll in? I know. We have Dave. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
You did a little. You had an at-bat at Fenway Park. Do you want to say anything about it?
Let me set it up.
Set it up.
Okay, Gold Star Families, Fenway Park, all the proceeds. If you don't know what a Gold Star family is, it's when your loved one dies in the line of duty. So these are all Gold Star families. It's at Fenway Park. Everybody was there, and I got invited. And the pitcher who was pitching to me, I got one at-bat at Fenway. This is what I want to say. I got one at-bat at Fenway my entire life. Now, I'm from the 02148. Am I going to pop up? Am I going to strike out? Am I going to be a champion and get on base? What am I going to do? What's Russo going to do?
What's he going to do?
Check it out.
Roll the tape.
I love seeing that. I still love seeing it. I promised that young kid I'd let him run, so I had to get on base.
That's great. Fantastic stuff. And you made a nice piece of contact there.
Not
you
bad.
Know? You know? Went with the pitch.
I told you, my mom was left president field. Of women's softball
yes.
for 25 years, and my dad's softball team, they were called the team. They were like the Harlem Globetrotters of softball back in the day. So, and I don't know if you know this, I am a 6-time Boston Comedy co-ed softball champion. That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah, I brag about that. We had the Boston Comedy Softball League for 10 years, and out of the first 5 years, the team I was on, we made it to the finals 3 of the 5 years. Four of the five, we won 3, and then they traded me. Controversial. Giggles wanted me. Giggles Comedy Club, Mike Clark, Lenny Clark, all those guys, all the old-timers wanted me because my team was the first. So the league made me sit out a year. I had to sit out. This is a Boston Comedy co-ed softball. I had to play on the last-place team. Okay. Well, I got to tell you, I had to play on the last place team for one whole season, all right? And then they let me play on Giggles, right? So then the following season, I'm on Giggles. Yeah. Giggles are like 2-14. Then yeah. I'm on the team. We make the finals.
All right.
We go into extra innings. So you can't make this up. Bottom of the ninth, okay?
Yeah.
Two outs. Now, we only go 7 innings in softball.
Yeah.
Now it's extra innings. It's the final championship. Extra innings. Russo's up. Two outs. Mike McCarthy from Medford goes, Russo, win this game. Hit a home run. I'm walking up. I go, I never hit home runs. I'm a singles hitter. I get up, take the first pitch. Next pitch, right center field over the Russian girl's head. I knew she couldn't catch. It's co-ed softball. I hit toward the girl. Don't worry about it. And I got a home run. We won the game. MVP.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And overtime. And then we won that tournament. And then next year we won again. And the next year we won. And the fourth year we lost in the finals. And that's when I retired.
So what team traded you?
So I was on, it was in Carbon Square, the comedy studio.
Okay.
I was in the comedy studio for the first 5 years, traded me the 6th year, And the last 4 years after that, I made the finals all 4 years and won three of them.
Well, that's very reminiscent of the curse of the Bambino. You know, you trade someone like that, and it comes back to
the comedy studio doesn't even have a team anymore. Right? They never made it past the first round after Russo left. True story, though.
That's a great story. I love that.
We went back to back.
I'm a singles hitter.
I'm a singles hitter because I was the leadoff hitter. And the funny thing is, so the two guys in the bottom of the ninth, I want to preface this because I just teased the women here. In the bottom of the ninth, there was two outs. And Kelly McCarthy, the woman I picked, okay, yeah. We had to pick two women, Mike McCarthy's cousin, I picked her at number one.
Yeah.
She got on base because she was a champion.
Yeah.
Well, almost as good as my mom. She got on base. I hit her home for the home run.
All right. So there you go. I love it.
Yeah,
all right, look at this, Dave. We're already halfway through the show. Just rambling on. You
right.
Come in off
420.
The plane.
420. I thought we were going to be, you said come in 420.
420.
I was going to bring my bong.
Yes. Showed up in shorts, but that's okay.
Do we already preface this?
Yes.
Earlier, we had a table.
Got rid of the table.
I don't know if you know Quadzilla.
Yes.
He taught me how to do these leg movements. That's why my legs are so big. Paul DeMeo, rest in peace.
God bless him.
Yes, he was a great 02148 person.
A lot of stuff we were talking about the show. I mean, you're booked through 2024. While we're talking about fundraisers, before we forget, yeah. I know it's a very important one. MOA, our friend Paul Hammersley, coming up on the 9th?
February 9th. I mean, I'm sorry,
May.
It's May 9th, Thursday.
Thursday night.
Probably about 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Marvin Overcomes Addiction. We've probably been doing this, I want to say, over 5 or 6 years. Probably more. Probably a decade. It just, time goes by so fast. If you're not familiar with it, but Malden has a program called Malden Overcomes Addiction, where they will, they'll help you find housing, they'll get you off the streets. Pretty much the 0214 is the leading, we're the leader in this. I mean, other cities are coming, Everett, they're all coming and following us, and they're helping support. Yeah. So we pretty much, I would say it's not just Malden, it's more of the greater Boston area, because a lot of people from Medford are involved, Everett, with this. So it's a community. It's a community thing. It's not just Malden.
Absolutely.
Although we take credit for Malden.
Yeah, but of course we've had Paul on.
Yeah, Hammersley,
Paul Hammersley on.
Of course. Well, he's done from, if anyone knows the history, Paul suffered from this horrible disease.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
open about his.
So it's like one of those things when you're down and out like this.
Yep.
And now he's up here.
Still giving back.
And he's still helping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, make his life's work. Yeah.
Once again, he was down here, and now he's up here, and he's still helping. So the people in the middle. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Right.
And I know you got a lot of things booked for the summer, and we're going to get in that. Before we do, though, imminently, next weekend is a big two shows.
Yeah. The Guido one.
Right?
Yeah.
We're starting with Father Guido. Guido's Last Supper. Yeah. It's actually next Friday night.
It's the second time of us doing this. Guido's Last Supper. Boston Guido's a buddy of mine. And we have a bunch of Italians. We have food. And it's a spinoff of... you know, getting whacked and being from the neighborhood.
It looks fun.
And eating a lot of food. Yeah, it's fun. We got the guys from Sopranos come in, and it's like a dress-up night. And, dress-up, eat, fun, pretend you're Italian, even if you're not.
Yeah, on the same religious theme, the following night you're at St. Joe's, which was my parish for about 15 years.
You know, it's funny. You asked me how I got that St. Joe's.
In Malden.
A person I went to school with reached out to me and said, hey, are you able to do a comedy show for St. Joe's, can you keep it clean? And I was like, no, I can't.
I'm not the guy.
So I got my, she said, listen, we want to raise some money for the church. Obviously, I said, listen, I understand. I said, I got my buddy Steve Bjork, who's a veteran of comedy. He talks about his four kids he adopted. And, you know, so it's all family-oriented stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're doing stuff, the podcast from the convent. You can't
sing. And you know what the thing is? How about this? I've done shows with priests in the yards. I tell people, I say to people, am I going to change my act? No. You know why? He's a priest. He hears confessions.
That's a good point.
Anything I say is nothing worse than you saying. Every once in a while, I wear my aunt's clothing. I don't know. You know what I mean? He hears everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, so a priest, I mean, I feel most comfortable in front of a priest.
Yeah.
I had to go sit in front of Monsignor Foley with no, remember when you first did confession back in the day at Chevers, you had a mesh thing, so he didn't know you'd change that voice. But hello, it's been 3 weeks since my last confession. Who is this? Hello. You know what I mean? And then later on, they may do it face to face. So when you have to go face to face with Monsignor Foley, who had shoes that were this big, I don't want, spooky. But, they've heard everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I just try to, you know, there's certain words, obviously, in the English language you can't use because people's heads will explode.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say like, hey, don't Donald Trump. Somebody's head's going to explode. These are jokes, people. Come on. No, but I mean, there's certain words you can't say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I actually enjoy the challenge of performing at a church. And I let people know. And I'll probably do it at the beginning. Hey, there's a priest.
Yeah.
You know? And then
sure.
We'll have fun with it. Because I'll
but,
tell you.
But I mean, in all honesty, Dave, I mean, your
relatively
act
clean.
Isn't
relatively
filthy.
Clean.
And
relatively
you rely
clean.
On humor. And
you know, I never got into entertainment to offend anybody. I got into entertainment primarily because I'm not good at getting up in the morning. As you can tell, I was running a little late this morning. And plus, people go to work every day. It's difficult to do that. yeah.
Yeah, but you mentioned, we talked about in previous shows, your mentors. And I know it's,
sure.
People don't mention it much, but Bill Cosby, a guy that went out there and just did clean comedy,
you know,
observational.
I told you I was having dental work done. I'm having dental work
yes.
done. This is how America
yeah.
works. So I said to the dentist, she's great
yeah.
dentist. I said, hey, listen, I don't want this to be uncomfortable. I said, but have you ever heard Bill Cosby's bit
yeah.
on dentistry? I said, it's legendary. It's funny. She goes, yeah. And as soon as I said it, she goes, yeah, I try not to pay attention to anything that Bill Cosby does. And I forgot
right.
that Bill Cosby got put in prison,
sure.
which, let me just go on record right now. That's got to be a mental illness, okay, because I don't have much money like him. I'm not, you know, but I don't have a problem meeting women like that. This guy could cash you in a movie. He could cash you in. He had so much power. Why did he need to do? So that's mental illness.
Gotcha.
I think that's mental illness. It's got to be mental illness.
Yeah. Well, and I brought him up because the difference, like someone like Dice Clay, who's
okay.
filthy, you know,
all right.
filthy and hysterical. I think there's all genres.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that then. Okay. So the Dice Man.
Yeah.
The Dice, somebody just asked me about it because I opened
you
for him.
You work with the Dice.
I opened for him right before New Year's Eve, right before 2020, the 30th of December. And I'll tell you one thing that I learned about him. And Don Gavin, you talked about mentors. Don Gavin said, your persona is you're the same person on stage that you are off stage. And to the T, Andrew Dice Clay is the same guy off stage in the green room.
Makes sense then.
Same guy.
Yeah.
Same guy. How you doing, kid? Take that picture. All right, let's do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's him.
And he just, he hasn't changed cash. So he's the real deal. You know, Cosby was clean. Dice was filthy dirty.
Yeah.
Dice has no, it's, I don't know. But there are some crazy things going on with comedians. Let's not get into that. That's a different show.
Yeah.
A lot of them are getting in trouble with crazy things.
We talked off camera a lot about this. The different, you know, Don Rickles, the insult. Type, you know, legendary.
He could never make
right?
it right now. He'd be
you
dumb.
Know, yeah, that's kind of
Bobby Slayton was very much like him.
Could,
yeah, well, he because he was the best, but you know, at the end, unfortunately, what he did and what kids are being taught right now is, you know, he did every ethnic joke there was.
No one was spared, right?
No one was spared.
Yeah.
No, he was Jewish.
Yeah.
He did a lot of Jewish jokes.
Oh, yeah.
He made fun of African Americans. He made fun of the Asian folks.
Yeah.
A lot of Asian jokes, which would not fly right now.
No.
At all. Because I put it on stuff and I see. So I don't know. I mean,
Times change, obviously. But
it's been a huge debate. I mean, I'm sure he could adjust. He's a legend.
He's a legend.
But that was his thing.
Yeah.
And there's a guy out there, Bobby Slayton, and he was very much like him. And, you know, people. It's just a changed world with the comedy because it's funny. You know,
Bill Burr, one of your favorites, right?
Billy
Contemporaries.
Burr. I mean, tough as nails. The kid's got to be tough as nails because I want to talk about thick skin. If you go to the next level, like if I were to go to the next level.
You're so funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you read the comments, I mean, I was he did a bit. I forget what the bit was 10 years ago. I was reading some of the comments and I'm going, the balls, excuse my language, on these people.
Yeah.
How dare they? They don't, you know what I mean? So it's like. You got to be tough. You got to be tough in this business.
Yeah. Isn't that what you want? Someone, if I go to a show, you know, I want the comics to say that I'm afraid to say.
Well, you would hope, but unfortunately, and Norm MacDonald said this, okay, before he passed away, and it makes so much sense. And if you pay attention to this, it makes so much sense. You have kids, the newer kids, doing open mic showcase, doing what they do. And they're talking about everything they want. They want to be edgy. They want to be this. They want to be that.
Yeah.
But number one, they don't have any authority yet. They don't have, hey, this is, Dave Chappelle can get away with what he does because he's already built that rapport.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Norm MacDonald said, they said, who's your favorite young comedian? He goes, there are none. And he's 100% right. It takes 2 decades.
Yeah.
It takes 20 years, he said, to be a legitimate good comic. And it only makes more sense to me now because I get it more now.
Sure.
I understand it more now.
You've been in the business 20 plus, right?
Well, yeah. 26, 27 years. And you're right. Some of the new comics, they're funny to their friends. Okay? But if you bring them in a crowd that no one knows who they are,
yeah,
it's a different animal.
Wow.
It's a different animal.
So much respect for that.
That's a different animal. Like when I first started doing comedy, 20, 30 of my friends would come out and see me. Now I'm the greatest because I'm doing jokes that they can relate with.
Yeah.
I'm talking about their stuff and them and their street,
yeah,
and their city. But now I'm going over here, and I can't rely on that stuff.
Well, you do a lot of, obviously, in this region, regional jokes, but then you're out in Vegas. They don't work in Vegas.
But the weird thing is, somehow, I knew Steve Sweeney was the king of Boston comedy. And so I never really did I tried to do jokes that would last 10 years. I tried to do stuff about myself personally, like the homeschooling bit that I wrote.
Yeah.
About being homeschooled. If you've never seen it, I'll do a couple jokes. I was homeschooled. When I left Pope John before I went to Malden High School, I was homeschooled. My mom took the job very seriously. She'd actually start off every morning with roll call.
Yeah.
Every morning, Dave Russo here. Okay, take your assignments. You know, I have all these jokes on homeschooling. I wrote them 24 years ago, and they still work today. You know, for art class, I got to paint the garage. You know, like, so they had the D.A.R.E. program. What do you say when your friends offer you marijuana? Thank you. You know, so it's like, the topical stuff,
yeah,
is good, but it lasts like 2 weeks, and then it's done. Like, I remember my opening joke for the longest time was when this was so long ago, but I remember it worked. It was when Tiger Woods came out with The Affair. He had the first, yeah, affair. I went on stage and said, listen, I just want to go on record. I, too, am having an affair with Tiger Woods. And then next thing you know, the next week, 20 people came out.
Yeah, yeah.
So that joke was killing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But it lasted 2 weeks.
Right. That's a topical,
you know? So,
one.
Yeah.
So and today's news cycle, too, is just a different animal, right?
Well, you can touch base on stuff. Like, today's 420. We can do pot jokes. You know, I have it in my arsenal. I can do some pot jokes. I mean, here's something we're talking about. If we're gonna kibitz a little bit.
Yeah.
Our governor just let out anyone that was in jail for pot, right? So half of my graduating class, I get to see them now. All right. But the strangest thing is, in Malden,
yes,
when you enter Malden now, you have a dispensary. When you're leaving Malden, you have a dispensary, right? Because,
yeah,
I went in there,
yeah,
just to smell what it smelled like, you know. And I got recognized, and I got embarrassed right away. I got embarrassed, and people are like, "What do you mean you got embarrassed? It's legal." And I was like, yeah, it's legal. But remember, like, in the 90s when you rented an adult movie and,
yeah,
you walked out back and you opened the drape and you saw somebody? I was like that kind of embarrassed. I was only in there for the
You're
smell.
There.
I was
there
only
there.
In there for the smell. I think that's clean enough for Malden Access Cable.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
on the same theme, you know, we were talking to our directors. We were having a little chat before you arrived. And I've talked to you before about being a comic, slash comedian.
Mm.
What's the difference in your mind? Comic, comedian, is there a difference?
This is what I'm finding out right now. Comedians are weird people.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also weird, but I'm a weird entertainer. What is the difference? Okay. I was listening to Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And for what I'm getting is, when you're a comedian, you just live and breathe, and just everything's joke, 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 writing, 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 joke, 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 and not caring if you offend, not caring. It's just, it is. This is what it is.
Your life.
And that's what it, right.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
I've had to learn how to do stand-up comedy, learn how to make a living doing it. And I chose the more of the non-edgy. I tried edgy. Edgy didn't work for me. People like me. I tried doing offensive jokes. They go, oh.
Yeah.
We like you. You're a gentleman.
You got to stay true to yourself, right? Is
that part, yeah, but every once in a while, I mean, I'm a guy. Yeah. I'm in a locker room. I do dirty jokes. People are like, oh, that was funny.
Oh, no, this is me.
This is me. You just don't know me. So with the comic and the comedian,
yeah,
is...
because you do comedic actors, it's a,
you know,
different realm.
I got into comedy, and this is what Jay Leno said, don't do. But I got into comedy because I wanted to be a comic actor. I wanted to be on a sitcom. I was thinking about being, I always thought about me doing a 3 to 5 minute humorous piece, a video, Similar to how Kevin Hart actually ended up making his things. He did like a little piece in the movie here, a little piece in the movie.
Yeah.
They started showcasing him. I'm kind of a fan of Jerry Seinfeld for one reason. Well, the biggest reason. I'm a fan of him. And I never was. I wasn't a huge fan of Jerry Seinfeld.
Really?
When I saw him on Tonight Show years ago, I was like, I was young. I didn't get it.
Sure.
I didn't like it. I mean, on-off switch. You know, I remember, I was like, you know. But now I'm learning from the guy. And I think the genius of Jerry Seinfeld was the fact he knew, and just like I kind of know, like, you know, after you see me once, twice, you know, maybe you don't want to see me all the time. And Jerry Seinfeld said recently, this is how comedy timing is. You can do a comedy for an hour, but if you stay on for an extra 20 minutes, that crowd will be like, should have got off earlier.
And he has that built in. He knows
he
when to leave.
He has the built in.
Yeah.
Now it changes the whole dynamics of comedy. So back to Jerry is true to yourself. Right. And
I saw him, to your point, Dave, I think I saw him in an interview once talking about Seinfeld. You know, he left $100 million on the table to do another season.
110. That's where I was.
It was time to go.
I'm sorry. That's where I was getting with this. Once again, ADD because I had sugar at the donuts.
Yeah. By the way, help yourself.
I love motions. What ended up happening was why I found the genius of him, and I tell people all the time, the genius of Jerry Seinfeld was that, number one, he put his ego aside. He had to have put his ego aside because one season Kramer is the king.
Yeah.
And Jerry's second fiddle.
Oh, yeah.
Louis Dreyfus, he's second fiddle. He was so, I know the interview you're talking about.
Yeah.
He realized, he got it.
Yeah.
He understood.
It revolved around him, but
he took second fiddle. He was still in charge. And George,
right.
Come on.
That's right.
You know,
played to his strength because he observed this behavior around him.
Him and Larry David.
Oh,
just crazy.
You big Curb fan? Ended.
I've been watching a lot of Larry because when I was in New York, as a matter of fact, that joke that I did, I wrote it when I went to New York about the tours of the homes. That joke I wrote 24 years ago.
Yes.
Come on in, and I remember on his episode later on they did an episode similar to that. I don't want to give you a tour of my house. Why don't I give you a tour of my house? Yeah. You've seen my house.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? So I remember going. So that's what I knew. I said, hey, I'm onto something.
Yeah.
If I'm writing stuff that he's writing, you know what I mean?
Oh, he's one of my.
I knew I was gonna. You know, it's funny. People.
You ever meet though any of those guys? Seinfeld?
I met Ray Romano. I was at his early tapings, pre-9/11, as a matter of fact, early 2000s, late, yeah, I was in, 2000, as a matter of fact, I was out there, so met Ray and all those guys. I went to his tapings over there. His Rory Rosegarden, his manager, was the first one that put me on TV, and that's how I introduced myself. I go, Ray, I got just a Boston comedian, but Rory Rosegarden put me on the show, I figured I'd say hi, and then he was, because you can't approach people, certain people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he was playing poker, so I got him. It was in Vegas.
Yeah. You know, you get at that level, that big, they got little.
Well, let me see now.
Were you asking me
what are some of the big guys I work with?
Yeah.
The late great at a UFC event, he was the, what is his name? Son of a gun. He was the, oh, I can pick, he had a bandana. And he used to like do cocaine out of a bowl, and they would put the straw in his nose. And he was legendary. He just recently passed, and he was legendary in Vegas. I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name.
Maybe you should have picked someone else.
But I'm trying to think of all the guys I work with in Vegas. Chappelle.
Yeah. When
I worked with Dave, he was working on the Killing Him Softly. His HBO special, Killing Him Softly. As a matter of fact, I remember because in the early show, we used to do two shows a night at the Comedy Connection. In the early show, he had a punchline for one of his jokes when he goes to a strip club and Killing Him Softly. And in the later show, he did a different punchline. And I remember him, I saw the creativity of Dave Chappelle and his people. They went and wrote that joke down. So when he did the Comedy Connection at Faneuil Hall, he was practicing.
Oh, yeah.
Practicing. He got paid thousands and thousands of dollars to come there to work on his act. How cool is that?
Well, you know, again, we were talking about
Amazing Jonathan. Boom, I nailed it.
There you got it.
Son of a gun. Can I tell you Amazing Jonathan's
yes,
story?
Yes, yes, yes.
So now I'm doing a show for the UFC in Las Vegas.
Yep.
And from what I understand, the owner who's putting this together is a born-again Christian or something like that. So we have to keep it clean. Okay? So I go into the octagon to do jokes after these women who just did dance and they looked phenomenal. My opening joke was, how about for the ladies? I can't believe I broke up with that one. You know, I thought it was a good joke. And then they start yelling out, yeah, They're yelling out slurs, right? And I'm going, I got to keep it clean. I'm going, I'm doing my act. I do my 5 minutes where I get off. Yeah. Amazing Jonathan goes, you effing. He's doing the F words. He's doing everything. He didn't give, and he's the real comic.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't care.
Yeah.
He didn't care. Well, he slayed the place. They were yelling. He's calling them, you know, gay word, you know, homosexual. Yeah, yeah. They call him like, he's like, and I'm amazed. When I'm going, the guy just said, born again Christian. But he didn't care.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot that day where if you're going to die, die hard. You know, I died a horrible day. I remember leaving, I go, Jesus,
yeah.
I don't know if I want to do comedy in the UFC octagon anymore. I felt like I just got pummeled.
Yeah. Well, we could do a whole other show. There's prop comics. And a lot of things you incorporate with your physical humor.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that movement, that athleticism, that dancing, that,
you know,
you have a great bit with the slow motion.
Sure.
Yeah.
And when I was on that reality show, The Entertainer, they had said to me, they go, listen, we really love your physical material. We want you to do more physical material. And I took that as like, oh, you don't like my writing? And the funny thing is, I was doing physical comedy a lot. And some of the more traditional comedians in Boston, they were kind of donks to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention their names, but a couple of them, they didn't like the fact that I was getting laughs by doing physical comedy. It's not really comedy. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought Steve Martin was a legendary comic. He does physical comedy. God, you mean to tell me, my whole life, I'm watching the movie The Jerk, Steve Martin doing arrows. Oh, so he's a hack because he did this. So I never understood the hypocrisy of the fact, in my act, I'm going to do a little bit of singing, I'm going to do a little bit of dancing, I'm going to tell some jokes. Because when I go to see a comedy show, I don't want to see somebody standing like this. I liked Eddie Murphy throwing a boomerang. My mom was Clint Eastwood with a shoot. Okay, Andrew Dice Clay was doing dancing. He was doing John Travolta.
Yeah.
Okay, entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
You mentioned Steve Martin. I mean, that documentary that's out now.
Come on.
Is fantastic.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he did the banjo. He did
everything. And right. he started, I mean, you want to talk about in San Francisco when he started, he used to go to the circus. He learned all that stuff from the circus.
That's right. Right.
You know?
Right, because he did magic
all
tricks.
All hidden. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably a little bit of a scam artist, I bet you. He probably knows how to, not going to buy any property from Florida off of Steve Martin.
And here he is, mid to late 70s, got a hit show.
Still giving back.
Right, yeah.
You can. So back to the comedy thing.
Yeah.
You mentioned the physical comedy. I'm trying to do more of that.
Yeah.
I really am because, number one, it's words are hurting people. Words are affected. Words, like people are upset over words.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes people that use the words, we don't even know, like we're using the word in one way and you're taking it in your brain a different way.
Well, that's right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like sometimes if I do a joke, I go, no, why are you upset about that one? You know, like I do a joke and it's a made up joke. It's a hockey joke. It's when I did it for a bunch of guys. I said, I dated a girl, her daughter's a goalie. And my friend says, is her daughter any good? And I go, probably not. It's really easy to score on a mom. You know, it's a stupid little guy joke, right?
Guy
and people
joke.
Get offended by it. And I go, yeah. I go, ladies, I go, I made up that person. I don't even
made it up.
You're offended by
not
it.
Real.
I go, I'm a hockey player. It's a goalie. Save. Score.
A little analogy.
Durr. It's called writing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but people get offended by it. I go, you're taking it the way wrong way. I'm taking it as that joke was specifically kind of geared toward the sports fan guy type of thing.
Right. Well, my grandmother was a goalie.
Right. Well, you know what? I can't believe I broke up with her. You know? Nina Padre.
All right, but you know, and I saw you've done some stuff. You've done some comedic acting, and I always brought to you the attention. You did a little web series. I know, and we're down to about 6-7 minutes, Dave. But I wanted to mention that because you did something involved with a coach. I don't know how many episodes it was.
Oh,
it was
that's
hysterical.
Right,
hysterical.
You know, Matt Finica, state champion wrestler out of Melrose, young kid. You know, I guess I'm mentoring him. Yeah, I'm mentoring him a little bit. Just like guys mentored me. He was young. He's a wrestler. I took him under my wing. Oh, you wrestled? So I know he's disciplined.
Yeah.
You know, I know he paid the price to be a state champion. So his uncle is a videographer, and he's a writer. And he wrote this short film where I'm coach, a two-time high school champion, back-to-back, 1991, 1992. I mean, he kind of like, he's like I'm still living, like the whole, the whole concept of me being coach was I'm still living in the past that I was this champion. And then the kid, and it's very funny. You got to watch it because the kid did
YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Your website?
We did pretty well with that one.
DaveRusso.net. Yeah. I had some legs. I thought I was waiting for the next season.
You know, we were going to do it again. It was the pandemic thing. It happened during the pandemic.
Shut everything down.
That, you know?
Yeah.
But that and the Live from the Comments, good. I'm going to start doing more of the, Like you know. Do you like the live version or do you like the ones that I already tape? You like when I go live with that stuff?
I love when you go live. Wake up in the morning at the convent. You know, you're in your socks.
I got to start doing that more.
Wardrobe today.
You know, I got this clothes. This shirt. I don't know if you have that. This shirt's an extra large. I don't even know if you have that shirt in this area. Build-A-Bear. You got that? It's an extra large. Baby Gap.
Right. Oh, man, 4 minutes. There's so much I wanted to touch. I know you want to talk about Focino Vineyard, too.
Focino
Vineyard.
Tell us
about that all summer. That's been going on. Okay. Is it your uncle?
My cousin, Al Focino, a brilliant man. So, first of all, Focino Vineyard, if you don't know what it is, it's a taste of Italy, 1 hour north of Boston, next to Nashua in Hollis, New Hampshire. Over 40 wines we have here. They have wine tastings. They have events. They have Sinatra night. They have piano night. They have Elvis night. We've produced stand-up comedy shows there for over a decade now. May 3rd, we have the Best of Boston Comedy. We have myself. We have Kenny Rising the Viper, who wrote for Lenny Clark's TV show. He's been in the movie Something About Mary. We have Mike Donovan, who just appeared on the Bill Burr podcast. Author.
Beautiful place.
The
vineyard. They have weddings there. They have
the events that they have at the winery right now. If you do go on my Dave Russell comic actor page, I did a post of it today. The place, he built it from scratch. It's perfect. It's the perfect date venue. It's the perfect weekend getaway. And
right, all summer long.
All
of course,
7 days a week.
You mentioned Skippy's. That's starting up in June.
Skippy's in June. Cape Cod, South Yarmouth, our annual Cape Cod event. I mean, we're really putting together all-star shows on the Saturday nights. We got Sweeney coming in. We got Lenny. J.J. Walker's coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Kid
I
Dynamite.
Saw him last
year. Yeah, he's going to be coming in. So we got, Paul Gilligan's coming in June 1. We have Richie Minervini from the Kevin, from the movies out. He's from Long Island. I mean, so Cape Cod, we got the Best of Boston coming to Cape
Cod. Might as well mention the Giggles you're playing with Paul.
May 11th. Gilligan, right? May 11th, Paulie G and I are going to be at Giggles Comedy Club also. He and I are going to be together June 6th. And Paul and I work together a lot. If you don't know who
Very
Paul
funny.
Gilligan is, he was just on the Charlie Moore show.
That's right.
An episode called Gilligan's Island. I don't go on boats because I'm Italian. A lot of times we go on boats, we don't come back. But I got on Charlie Moore's show for one joke. He goes, "You know anything about fishing?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "What's your favorite fish?" And I was like, "Swedish." Thank you, Anthony Scabelli, who wrote that joke.
Another local guy we've had Paul on. I'm going to love to have Paul come back.
You've had Skib on.
Great. Talented writer.
Brilliant kid.
Comedian.
He's got a great YouTube page. He has what's called... It's a whole spinoff of the history. I always call it the history of Hollywood.
Yeah,
he does all history of famous comics and their background, people that we never even knew of. Pat Morita.
Oh yeah, unsung heroes.
Unsung heroes.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
I always call it Hollywood history.
Oh yeah,
but unsung heroes.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Great little great watch.
Yeah.
It's short and sweet, and it gets to the point.
Very good. So we got what? I don't know, a minute or two left, Dave. Oh. Also, the hats. The hats are selling off the...
Yes. If you go on DaveRusso.net, use Russo30 for the code. You get 30% off.
Yep.
Right now, the Bruins and the Bruins alumni are sporting my classic Anthem Scally cap.
Looks good, man.
Yeah.
You wear it well. Dave, can't thank you enough for coming
my pleasure, Mike.
Flying in.
Oh, yeah, we flew in.
I'm
going to wear pants next time.
St. Joe's, maybe next week. Sounds good. I'd love to come up the vineyard again.
You're always welcome to the vineyard. Everyone's always welcome. You know, DaveRusso.net, you can email me off there and we'll let you know about upcoming events and shows. And, I'm in the latter part of the comedy scene right now. I caught my little big break.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying doing comedy more now because if I do accidentally offend somebody, it's probably their fault. because I've done this stuff before. You're a new audience member. I'm a seasoned comedian. If you're going, ooh, you're not a good audience member. You're a rookie. Pick it up! Because people say to you...
Little Larry David there.
Well,
I like that.
Well, how about this? People say to me all the time, are you going to be funny? I go, are you going to be a good audience member?
There you go.
How's that sound? If you're a good audience member, I'm going to be funny.
Two-way street. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Russo. Thanks again, Dave.
My pleasure.
Show's over, folks. I'd like to end with a quote, and I think it's a guy who once was very... Well, probably still is very complimentary of you, Mr. Stephen Wright.
Okay.
Who said... A good conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory. God bless you, Malden. See you next month.